everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion. Right. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
And we have a guest today. We're going to get into body language, persuasion, how to read people like a book. That should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous because whenever we have this type of guest on, I'm like, be on your best behavior. Don't make any funny faces. But
oh well. It's a little different over the screen, I think, maybe.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I'm sure in this world of COVID, he's figured out how to do it on the screen, too.
So. Oh, I'm sure.
Yes, we have a body language. Well, it goes way beyond just body language. I mean, this guy knows all kinds of stuff. I was looking at their website. It's pretty... Yes. Pretty cool. Pretty cool, like, courses and everything on there. So that'll be fun to talk about.
Yep. Excited about it.
So.
All right. So should we go ahead? He's got a beverage. Okay. So why not? Let's just go ahead and invite him in on the show. We have Dr. Matthew Cain. He is of, the company is Prodigy Intel. I love that name. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Prodigy Intel. How'd you come up with that name? I like that. It's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, so we were actually sitting in my business partner's basement thinking up names. And it's not the first name we came up with. The first name we came up with was actually taken. Another company already used it.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Imagine that. In this day and age.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you can get a cease and desist if you make the wrong choice there. Yes. I've had that happen before. Hey,
yes. And the URL isn't available and aspects like that. So it was actually our third name that we came up with.
Mm-hmm.
And my business partner, his ex-wife at the time, hated it. And I think that drove him to use it even more.
Oh,
I like it.
Very cool. So, well, let's give our audience a little background on yourself, and then we'll get into some beverages, and then we'll jump into our topic. So Dr. Matthew Cain served 10 years in the Canadian Armed Forces, serving as a military intelligence officer. During that time, he worked in a variety of roles from counterintelligence, countering human smuggling, anti-Somali piracy, counter-narcotics to counter-terrorism was his final job. He led intelligence cell where his job was counter-IED, stopping roadside bombs. Man, pretty dangerous stuff there. During his time in intelligence, he got to start in reading body language and learned from a variety of experts on the subject within the service. So Matthew, I'm really happy. This should be really interesting from, you know, Sean and I we're both military guys. So this should be fun. Just talking about it from your perspective, based on your experience and some of the stuff that you've, kind of worked with, you know, and I mean, you get into terrorism, all sorts of stuff, you know, you can go pretty deep into that one, right?
Well, I got a question though, Dr. Matt. I'm looking at the comments from our YouTube and like the KGB is watching. I mean, what are the odds?
I love
that
it.
Is crazy.
I love
that it. Is crazy. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but.
Did you do any Russian intelligence? I mean, is that a thing? Or yeah, I'm sure there's a Russian intelligence.
Yeah, there's. I mean, there's a Nikolai Petrovich Kane.
Oh, wow.
No, so that's about the extent of my Russian these days. Haven't spoken Russian in 15 years.
Oh, very cool.
So, wow. Never got into working counter Russian stuff like that. So I was very lucky. I got a lot of big name items for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many language outside of, how many other languages can you speak?
Very rustily. not many. French and a little bit of Mandarin.
Yeah, we got somebody else commenting. Nice try, Rush. That's good stuff.
And then the KGB's like, yeah, we're looking forward to this. So careful. they've been looking for you, apparently. So,
oh no.
And Ramal says impressive on the Russian, I guess. So yeah, very cool.
All right, so let's get into our brews. You have a beer joining us today, yes. So we let our guest go first and share what you have.
So I got a local microbrew for me.
Okay,
Three Logs Brewing. They only sell in 750 milliliter cans or 2 liter growlers. So I got a ton of beer for me. It's the Maggie American Wheat Ale, which is one of my favorite. And a little bit about Three Dogs. They're a great brewery that's about a 5-minute walk from my place.
Oh, and that's nice.
It is. They name all their beers something about dogs. Like there was the Double Dog Dare. There's a Fetch IPA. Don't Know Sit Lager. Stuff like that.
So I love when beer companies do that type of branding where that's, I've got one here that's one of my favorites and everything's like a full grown man or some takeoff of this bearded guy. That's great. So I love when they have that theme across their brand. Makes it very memorable and fun.
How cool is it to have a brewery right down from you? You just walk down to it.
I mean, walking distance. It seems dangerous.
Absolutely.
It is. It's very dangerous.
I mean, take the laptop and who knows what you're sending out.
Oh, there's been a couple of days where they serve some food as well. So a couple of days where I've gone, had lunch. They have a nice little patio.
Lingered a little while.
Lingered a little longer than I should have. The wife's a little upset when I get home.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how this show started, was just hanging out at not a brewery, but at least a pub with a lot of beers to choose from. So 22 beers on tap. So that was always, always fun. So
what'd you bring on with us today? What do you got?
I got the Maggie American Wheat Ale.
It's the Maggie.
Can't really see that. Yeah. So it's a American Wheat Ale. One of my favorites of theirs.
Okay,
cool.
I can just say it's a 5.4% alcohol and 9 IBU.
Okay. Pretty low.
Very cool.
Yes.
All right, Jonathan.
All right. So I couldn't decide. Before the show, I actually brought two of these. They're both from Dunkin'. It's their limited series, the Harpoon series. So I brought two. I couldn't decide before the show, but I think I'm going to go with the purple. This is the Dunkin' Midnight. And the reason I'm going with this one, the other one's I'm kind of over the pumpkin thing. We've done that. We're kind of over that a little bit. This one is the Midnight Roast Coffee. All right, here it is. The riff on a classic Dunkin' coffee porter, and it's brewed with Dunkin's new Midnight Roast Coffee for some extra roasty aromatics, dark chocolate notes, and an espresso finish. My only problem is it's got a taste of, let's see, it's chocolate covered espresso beans, toffee, raisins, and molasses. Mm. So we'll see how that goes.
See what the raisins are all about. That's the wild card there.
Yeah.
They didn't need to do that. There's no reason for that.
No, they didn't. Maybe maybe they're just trying to offset the espresso. You know, they're offsetting the espresso and the, you know, the acidic.
I mean, that's what the toffee and molasses is for.
Well, you would think. You would think.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it's perfect. I don't know.
It looks delightful, though.
It does look good. It does look midnight, so I like that. All right. Well, I'm going to go with – I've been saving this one for when we had a guest on that was blonde, but we haven't had that, so just time to drink it. It's called Feisty Blonde. And it's a honey vanilla blonde ale. Mm. This ain't your mama's blonde. It's fairly light at 8.27% alcohol. I love how these last few beers have been going to double decimals on their alcohol content.
Right.
This bronze golden ale combines deeply aromatic orange blossom honey with a touch of pure Mexican vanilla and raw, I can't say that word, piloncillo. To round out its smooth finish, brewed with 4 grains and 2 varieties hops for balance, but unpasteurized and unfiltered to allow the natural essence of the citrus blossom to shine.
Nice.
It's an ale, at least. It's not a pale ale. So I'm hoping we're okay.
Matthew, so. You can tell we do a lot of show prep. We just read it on the spot. We don't even know what we're having. So yeah. we just read our description. Like, we have no idea what we're about to go into. So
we try not to drink the same beer before the show, you know, if possible.
That's right.
Because, you know, sometimes you have to buy a 4-pack and
you gotta try
to avoid it before Absolutely. You do it. So mine is very different color than you guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, about the same. Yeah. There. Yeah. So I got the light one today. All right. Well, shall we? Cheers. Yep.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Notice I went before I even actually took the taste.
The aroma, that chocolate aroma, huh?
It did. The coffee, the chocolate.
Not a lot of raisins, I take it.
He's already half done. It must be pretty good. Some really good. Big sips.
It's really good.
All right. Yeah, I like mine too. Matt, we'll let you lead off. What do you rate on a scale of 1 to 5 pints, 5 being the best? You can use decimals, whatever you want, because the score doesn't actually matter.
This is one of my go-tos for Three Dogs. So I'll give it a 4.75.
All right.
Oh, nice. I think that was really good.
That's a solid score. Yeah.
That's a solid score.
All right. Jonathan?
You know what? I'm going to give it the same, 4.75. This is a good... It's not deserving of an even 5, but it's really, really good. Love the coffee. Love the dark chocolate. I thought the raisins would be a problem there, but nope. Can't even tell.
Just there for the drama, huh?
Just there.
I guess.
I thought there would be a little bit of raisin aftertaste, maybe something like that. I don't know, with the mixed with the molasses aftertaste.
Yeah, it's good. Maybe they couldn't afford wine barrels, so they just threw some raisins in. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? All right, so I'm giving the Feisty Blonde. I'm gonna stay with the trend here, and I'm gonna go 4.75. This is probably the lightest 8% beer I've ever had.
Right.
Like this could be dangerous. Like, you could drink a 6-pack of these because they're light enough. I mean, they're sweet, but they're not heavy, you know. So this would be one that you could get in trouble with at 8.27% alcohol for sure. So good thing.
Yeah, you could easily knock out a few of those without really, before you knew it, you're.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're sitting down at the brewery, you know,
that's one of those where you actually need to live close. Like Matthew.
Yeah. You
know, that's
you know what I mean? So 4.75s across the board.
Nice.
Nice. Very good.
All right.
All right. Well, let's jump in. Matt, I gave kind of a snippet of your history there. Why don't you kind of tell our audience, before we get into the topic of body language and persuasion, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your time in the military?
Ooh, sure. So, worked a variety of jobs in the military. I started off actually as a mechanic in the Navy. So as a stoker. My mom was a base brat, lived all over the world. She spoke 8 or 9 languages.
Wow,
cool. So she actually passed away when I was fairly young. Mm-hmm. But it was important to her that we learn languages, my sister and I. So I went out, made sure I learned languages, and I got selected for some special small arms training in the military and met a couple intelligence officers, and they're like, oh, we're going to recruit you into intelligence. It's basically how it went. So sure. I got into military intelligence, did 8.5 years in intelligence, loved almost every second of it. There was times where it was absolutely horrible. Lots of, you know, it's those movies things, you know, you see the action packed moments, but you don't see the hurry up and wait of it all.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we know all about the hurry up and wait thing.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
So I'll say one of my favorite moments is, have you guys seen Captain Phillips?
The movie?
Oh, is that the one with Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks, the Somalian Pirates.
Somalia Pirates, yeah.
So the Navy SEAL who called the shot, like, okay, shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote 6 to 8 weeks before that, he almost beat the living daylights out of me. And I say almost, not because I would have won, but because he was stopped. Because we got into an argument over who won the War of 1812, Canada or the U.S.
So
that's my little connection to the Captain Phillips movie franchise.
That's great. Very nice.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
So you said he was stopped short. So what?
He was stopped short. He was there was a girl, a lady from the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Yeah.
Who stopped him from just pummeling me. So he was all ready to go. And
so you were saved by a girl from getting beat up.
Yes, by a Navy SEAL.
Cool.
Though he did say at one point, I'm going to beat the living daylights out of you. And I said, I know, but I'll still be right.
Hey, if you're going to get your ass kicked, Navy SEAL is probably, I mean.
It makes a good story. It's like, good story. Yeah, exactly. You know? People would kind of expect that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's fair. Was there a catchphrase, like Jonathan and I were both in the Army and, you know, hoorah was one of our catchphrases or hooah, depending.
Yep.
Do you have a catchphrase in Canadian? Was it Canadian Army? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Not really. Yeah. That's very American.
Yeah.
And Canada wants to be its own and different. So
sure.
Well, you can have a different phrase. You don't have to avoid it all together. I mean, that's pretty harsh. Well,
each branch.
You guys will say, hey, A.
So I have an aunt who's a professor at Boise State. She's Canadian, teaches there. She gets picked on all the time by other staff and students for saying A all the time. So
of course. That's all we know about you guys.
Of course.
You're just hiding up there north of the border. And I don't know what's going on. So, all right. So let's talk intelligence. And first of all, intelligence covers a lot.
It does.
So is there a kind of a standard definition for intelligence? And then how we'll start there.
Is there a standard definition for intelligence? I'd say no, because there's so many different subparts to it. Like there's signals intelligence, human intelligence, counterintelligence. Mm-hmm. That's one of the areas I specialized in. That's hunting down other spies.
Okay.
Human intelligence, that covert guy on the ground getting information. SIGINT is super classified stuff. NSA type stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you specialize in counterintelligence?
Yes.
Okay. So, and specifically, what does counterintelligence do again?
So my job is to find other, essentially, spies and stop them.
Okay. So you had to be able to identify and notice and recognize those people, right? And that's kind of where what you're doing now comes in.
Yes. So one of the jobs I had overseas was I got slotted into a counter-narcotics cell and worked there as an analyst, but I was also doing counterintelligence because like clockwork, you know, that cell was doing 100 million worth of drug busts a month. Then all of a sudden it stopped. So they figured something was wrong. And we figured it was a certain guy who got hungry and was selling information. And it wasn't. It was the obvious guy wasn't the answer. It was a different person. And it was a couple of little things with this guy's body language that tipped me off that something wasn't just quite right.
Oh, interesting. So the guy that it wasn't or the guy that it actually was tipped you off?
So the body language of the guy that it was tipped me off. He did a couple of things with his body language and how he acted. It was just a little off, and it led me down a case, gathering information for 3 long months. That was very slow. Mm-hmm. And then within 36 hours, everything flew. So I worked with NCIS, the FBI, in that last 36 hours to grab the guy. We pulled his clearance, stop him from accessing anything. They did their job, and he was detained.
Mm-hmm. So how big or small are these tells? I mean, is that what you would call them, a tell, or is it?
Yeah.
And how big or small are they typically? And like, I would think if you're a spy or something like that, you should be pretty good at your job, but human nature is human nature too.
Right.
Human nature is human nature. And I can get into the whole neurology of this, but it's really boring. So I won't. Yeah. But basically our brains, when we lie, there's subconscious signals that we send and we can't control it. And when we're being off, so there's little tiny tells, like micro expressions, that are brief facial expressions that show the emotion someone's actually feeling. Those last for anywhere from 67 milliseconds up to half a second, or 500 milliseconds.
Wow.
So really quick. And I wrote my doctoral thesis on training people to recognize those. And then you get bigger body language cues, and those things, you need two or three things to kind of tell what the person's feeling or how they're acting or what they want to be doing.
Which is more reliable, the big ones or the small ones?
Ooh. So I would say clusters are more reliable.
Okay. That makes sense.
Two or three together. So you get a micro expression, then you read that with the body language and how it's changed in the last 30 seconds or whatever.
Cool.
Can you give us some examples? I mean, what are some typical things that you look for, in whether it's facial expression, body, you know, how somebody positions himself? I mean, give us some examples of some things that tip you off to, you know, whether this guy's bad news or good news.
Oh, bad news or good news. Interesting.
Start with Sean first.
So what I'll say is, especially in Western cultures, we look at the face the most. Mm-hmm. So when I teach this stuff, I teach heavily on facial expressions and say, because we're expected to look someone in the eye and look at their face.
Right.
So look at the face the most, even though it sends the least amount of signals. So we should be looking at body language as well. And why I always advocate working in teams. One person can kind of stand back or pretend they're reading something, have a beer, read the whole body language. You get more of the situational awareness with it. But I was being asked yesterday about, okay, so like Christmas parties are coming up soon. And, you know, I want to be the life of the party. How do I know if I go up to somebody and, like, if they're interested in talking to me? So one of the things I said, okay, like, look at their arms. If they're crossed and their feet are pointing away from you, you know they're not interested. So people tend to point their feet where they're interested or where they want to go.
Okay.
So if you're in a two-person conversation, you should be head-on facing each other. But if the person angles themselves a bit, you know that they want to escape from the conversation.
I see.
So the person who was asking me was saying, oh, you know, like, what if, you know, I go up to this woman who I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And her feet are pointing away from me. I was like, well, she's probably not interested. So you probably got 30 seconds to impress her. So you got to come up with like some big topic, see if her body language changes. And if not, then you're out of luck and you've wasted your time.
Move on.
Yep.
So I'm curious, with the pandemic and all this stuff and everybody going to video, has video made it harder? You know, first of all, like, our cameras are not eye contact, right? We're slightly off with most cameras although I saw a new camera that just is on Kickstarter, one of those that it's a real small thing and it hangs down to the middle of your screen so that can make eye contact without losing the facial thing. But has video, like the prevalence of video over the last couple of years, changed the way we're able to catch people?
So it's put a lot more reliance on facial expressions. You can't see what's going on with most people.
Right.
So you can't see, like, even, you know, I'm talking with my hands, but it's hard to see that at times. And so there's different things, different aspects, like the sending capacity. the ability to send messages through body language is greatly limited because of the pandemic, because of video cameras. And it has made it a lot harder. There's a couple trainers out there who've gone off and said, this is what the pandemic's done. We're going to focus almost solely on facial expressions because that's our key indicator and what it's going to be. And you can check out Dr. David Matsumoto at humantel.com. And he has a facial recognition, or not, an emotional recognition training tool with the mask over the people. So you can learn to recognize facial expressions with the COVID mask or medical mask over somebody, which is really cool.
Yeah, that would be, I would think that would be challenging. I mean, everybody's
it is.
Yeah.
Because so many facial expressions show the same things with the eyes. So when you only get this part of it, it's a lot more difficult when you're not seeing the mouth and how the mouth and nose change due to different facial expressions.
That's interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I'm looking at the site.
Yeah, that's the site, HumanTel. Okay. So Dr. David Matsumoto, really good guy. I've had the opportunity to speak with him before, and he's trained a bunch of people on this. One of the experts in the field and one of the few people doing active research in this area.
Cool. Very cool. So how do we use this in day-to-day business? Obviously you train a lot of people, you train businesses.
Yep.
How are people using this? How can we apply this to our business relationships? We'll start there. And then also obviously personal relationships, but especially business. How do we use this in an ethical way? when we're trying to conduct business, Jonathan's in sales. He meets with people, both in person, virtually.
Yeah.
I meet with clients mostly virtually. So how do we use this?
So one of the big things that I've done is train, sales and HR reps.
Okay.
So with HR reps, there's lots of conflict negotiation, he said versus he said, stuff like that. So how do you get a read of who's being more truthful? And that's one of my big things that I teach. There's the nonverbal communication, body language, but also the deception detection to know when a person's lying. And so, but with sales, let's say for Jonathan, how to build rapport quicker, how to build that relationship more solidly on a foundation, because people make an assessment of you in the first 1/100th of a second or 100 milliseconds that they see you. So you got to be presenting yourself in a certain way to be taken seriously or professionally or however you want to be taken. Mm-hmm. And so we take that subconscious aspect of how we present ourselves. And basically I teach people how to turn it into a conscious aspect. Mm-hmm. So have you guys ever had that feeling like, this person didn't say anything wrong during the conversation, but something just wasn't right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. That's the subconscious aspect saying their body language and their verbal statements didn't match up.
Yep.
Something's wrong there. Don't trust them.
Yeah.
So I've got going back to the video world we're in.
Yeah.
Do we lose some of that ability to detect energy and, because everybody... you can walk into a room and feel a certain energy in a room if things are off or not. Are we losing some of that with video and that communication, or is there enough other subconscious stuff going on that we can still pick it up?
I would say that we can pick it up, but not to the same extent. So we're going to lose some of that energy because we're not there in person, and we're social creatures. We want to be there in person. We want to be interacting. We want to be shaking hands, giving hugs. And with COVID over webcams and all this, we can't be doing that. So we're going to lose some of that energy. Definitely.
And since all three of us have beards, I'm curious, has that, with the trend with beards over the last 10 years, because you used to in the 80s, especially, how old you are, Dr. Matt, but it used to be like, you shouldn't have a beard in business because you know, it makes you untrustworthy and like you should be clean shaven. Like that was the thing back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like all the personal development business guys, that's when that and how you dress, which is my other question too. But
yeah.
Has beards like
beards hindered? And untucked shirts, you know, basically hipster looks.
Yeah. So has that affected our ability to like get a read on people?
Ooh, good question. So I'm going to answer no. Well, depends on the beard, I should say. You know, the big lumberjack beards that we're so stereotypical of here for in Canada, you know, where it covers everything.
Yeah.
That's going to impact it a bit. But the beards that the three of us have, no.
Yeah.
But the other side of that, going back to what you're saying about the 80s, they've done research on it. As long as less than half of men, so the minority of men have beards, it comes off as being more trustworthy and more credible.
Really?
Really. So there were studies, I forget where, who did these studies, but there were studies done on this. And they found that, yeah, as long as the minority of men had beards, those who had beards appeared more credible.
Hmm. Interesting.
So I was actually coaching a politician for a debate not that long ago. And he asked me, should I shave my beard? And I said, well, here's the stats on how many people have beards in your area. And here's your age. You shouldn't shave your beard because it adds credibility. And you got a bit of a baby face. So you look young when you shave it. And you look too young, really, to be credible in politics.
Sure.
So it wasn't Ted Cruz.
No.
All right, just checking. Because I was thinking maybe Ted Cruz until you said baby face. And I was like, no, not Ted Cruz. So, So what about dress? Because it used to be like a thing, like you wanted to dress to impress. And I feel like that's gone away a little bit with the casualization. But there's still some people who firmly believe in like.
I don't think it's gone away. I think it's changed, but there's a different way to, you know, you don't have to go all out with the coat anymore.
Yeah.
But I still think there's something to, you know, dress, obviously, that that matters, especially in a business setting.
Yeah, you can't be a slob. Still got to look clean. Yep. But you're right, Jonathan. Like, it's a lot more casual these days.
Casual business.
What I go for is more colors and how it impacts the psychological aspects of us.
Mm-hmm. So give us some... go a little deeper on that.
Blue, like I'm wearing, has trust. Blue and greens have trust calming effects on us because of this whole.
Is that because of the color, or is that because of the branding of Fortune 500 companies that are like all blue?
It's because of the color itself, and then Fortune 500 companies have found this and then done all their logos to incorporate these colors.
Right.
Well, you look at, I always think of like, you know, all of these news platforms nowadays, you know, news channels, you go to it and typically they always have a blue background and there's a reason behind that. It's like, they're trying to like convey trust, you know, in this day and age, you know, that's out the window, but they're still using it, you know, in the background and there's a reason behind that.
Well, let's ask that. Like, does it still build trust even if you're skeptical? Like, does it have an effect even if it's in the background? I know she got a lot of blue books behind you too.
Those are this side. These are all journal articles journals on foreign affairs.
So does the color like still sway today?
I don't want to say that it will necessarily like build trust, but it has, like, studies have shown that it has a calming effect. Mm-hmm. If it has a calming effect, you're more likely to stay there longer.
So you're not on alert.
Not on alert. So you're going to watch more. You're going to be there longer. So it's by proxy, it almost builds trust because then you're going to develop some cognitive dissonance and say, oh, well, I spent all this time watching this show. It must be worth it.
Yeah.
Right. So you said blues and greens kind of have, you don't see a lot of green with like on the news sets and stuff like that.
No, you don't. It's and I wonder if it's because green screens are used so commonly now.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
So.
Yeah, you definitely, you know, can't wear a green shirt when you're presenting and there's a green screen behind you. That would look weird. Yeah.
Some of the other, I'm thinking some of the other colors. White is more professional, right? I mean, that's why you always see doctors in the white. And chemists in the white robes or the robes, but the lab coats and things like that. Yeah, yeah.
A chemist in a white robe would be just not trustworthy. Just fine line.
Red passion, right?
Or hunger.
Yeah.
all the fast food companies use red.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's right.
Because it makes you hungry.
Pizza Hut.
yeah.
Comment, is it easier to read body language in someone if they have had a beer? That's a good question. Thanks, Bruce.
Right on topic, Bruce. We'll just have you host the show.
So, I would say one beer, probably. Yes, because it's going to relax them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that subconscious level is going to be a little bit easier to come across. Now, if they've had three or four beers, it's going to impair their body language.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So
as you're building rapport, give somebody a drink,
but not too many,
kind of hold it back, right? Or get the important questions out up front.
Yes.
And then, so you can gauge them and then you can find out, then you can give them as much as you want to get the information out of them.
Yes.
All right. Is that how you did it when you interrogated people?
No, we're not giving beers or shots to people.
So do you work with any negotiation settings with organizations? The reason I bring that up is because, you know, one of my all-time favorite books was Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference. I don't know if you've ever seen that book. He's former CIA. Yep. Guy, and he goes in. I've actually gone through his, he's got a master's class on negotiation, which is really good. And so some of this, he talks about, you know, body language, reading people during a negotiation setting. And, do you bring any of that into negotiation for sales or FBI or police or whatever?
Yes. So, two aspects to this. The first, like, I've sat in on corporate negotiations.
Okay.
And really, generally quite boring. The ladies have it out. But there's always the one guy is like, oh, we can't go any higher.
Yeah.
And it's my job to know when they can't go any higher and when they're just lying to you.
Yeah.
For their own benefits.
Mm-hmm. So how does that deal work? Do you get like a percentage of that? Like,
I charge
that
a seems like a pretty...
Okay, because that seems like a pretty valuable skill right there.
I think so.
Yeah, I hope it's a good flat fee. I think you should get a flat fee plus percentage or something. Yeah. Either percentage that you save or percentage that you earn, depending on which side you're on.
Yes, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe we'll start doing that, Sean.
Yeah, that'd be good for you. How do we use this day to day, like all this, you've got all this knowledge about like how to read people, how to do this. So how do we use this on a day to day basis to, you know, ethically persuade people in the direction we need them or want them to go in our business? That's a big question, but what are some tips and tactics and things we can take away?
And I love how you said ethically, because that's one of my big things too. Yeah. Not using.
Well, we've got some scoundrels as listeners, so we have to be very implicit, because these guys will do anything to, you know, to persuade whoever they need to.
Oh yeah.
Or their wives, you know. I mean, that's a challenge in of itself. You know, your spouse, you know, persuading your spouse.
You know. Yeah, we should have disclaimers. Please do not use these everything you learn on the show against your spouse.
So
even though we try to.
I'll come back to the question that you asked, Sean, because I got a short story about using this stuff on my spouse.
Oh, this is good stuff here. The beer is kicking in.
now I'm like taking notes here.
My now wife, we were just dating at the time. Mm-hmm. But
your now wife, you as opposed to your previous wife.
No, I've only had one wife.
Okay, all right. Because maybe I thought maybe you could have used this on the previous, didn't, you know, backfired, and now you've learned from your mistakes.
Well, I've learned from my mistakes. So we get in an argument over something small. It's not that big. Yeah. We're laying in bed, and I was like, okay, what did I do wrong? It's like, what do you mean? I was like, you're angry with me. What did I do wrong? I'm not angry with you. Well, that's an anger expression on your face. Ooh. Stop reading me. Yeah, rolls over. I was like, okay. So there's a lesson in here, I think, for our day-to-day use as well.
Yeah.
That you can tell what someone's feeling. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily why they're feeling, but what someone's feeling. And that's not always the best thing to put back in their face. Oh, you're feeling angry or happy or this.
Sure.
Just know for yourself that they're feeling that way. And you can use that to help persuade them down the road that you want to go as well. Because the language that is going to resonate with them most in that time coincides with the emotions that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. So you want to use if they're happy, you want to use happy words. If they're sad, you want to use sadness. Oh, that really makes me feel for you. That really makes me feel, you know, morose or whatever. You want to match the emotion with the words that you're using. Beyond that, in our everyday life, we can use, like, we use this every day, just on a subconscious level. So, like I said, you know, I take this from the subconscious to the conscious level. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, like, the biggest tips and tricks are probably, you know, watching the feet. Because you'll and like how the body's angled. I love going to conferences and watching body language. It's like, oh, that person wants out of the conversation. This person wants this, you know, just things like that. And it's really easy to tell just by like how their body's angled away or to the person and where their feet are pointing.
Yeah.
Get good at reading emotional states. We're just about to put up an online course on that on our site, or you can check out humantel.com or Paul Ekman. Just Google Dr. Paul Ekman. Yeah. And he's one of the big names in there as well. But just getting good at reading facial expressions. And because they're shown the same, certain facial expressions are shown the same in all humans, mm-hmm. it gets really good at, yeah. So if you go down to our nonverbal communication course, which is just a little bit below, you'll see someone standing with their fingers behind their back. That one.
Oh, it's missing the little thing.
Yep.
Okay. It's just down there. Not sure why that is, but anyway, we teach micro expression recognition in there. We teach tons of different cool skills in there.
Yeah, there's some cool looking courses on here. I may have to. Are these in person? Are they virtual or both?
Both. So you can check out our schedule up until the end of February. So we got some online ones and some in person ones.
Yeah. And I see you got some. Jonathan, you and I may have to take a business trip and do one of these two.
Absolutely.
So, 2 or 5 day fun military adventure training.
Absolutely.
That sounds like fun. You got any of those scheduled coming up?
Not yet. So we tend to do those in the spring and summer months. It gets kind of rainy up here. Mm-hmm. And the rest of Canada is covered in snow. So no one wants to be.
We're not going up there this time of year. Forget it.
No, absolutely not. We're too far south.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wouldn't expect that. But no, we have a ton of fun teaching all these courses.
So just for people that might want to check this out on your site, you got, it looks like 3 levels. You've kind of got a beginner for a lot of these and then an intermediate or a junior and intermediate and advanced. Can you just give people an idea of the difference? Like you have to go through those in order?
No,
or
you don't.
Okay.
So there's a certain expectation if you hop on to like the intermediate or the advanced courses that you'll have an understanding of the basic principles that we're teaching in there. So for leadership, you can go in and see, you know, they're designed for different levels of leadership. There's internet intelligence. So like OSINT, we talk about different stuff, like how to get into the dark web, how to trace proxies, how to do stuff like that.
How to check up on your teenagers.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So I got a quick question too. Yeah. I want to ask, how do you what are some things that you look for automatically to tell that somebody is not telling you the honest truth?
Teenagers. Ooh. Specifically. Teenagers. I think that's what Jonathan's asking.
Yeah. Well, I just happened to say that after, you know, talked about teenagers, but yeah, that's a good segue. Are you smoking pot? No.
So let me start off with probably the biggest misconception out there with body language. And I get this on every course I teach. People think that when you look down or look away, you're lying. Not the case. So people actually tend to maintain eye contact for longer when they're lying.
Really?
Really. So in North America, we tend to maintain eye contact for between 5 and 8 seconds before breaking it and re-engaging. Mm-hmm. When we're lying, we tend to maintain eye contact for longer than that.
I guess that makes sense because you're trying to overcompensate, right?
Trying to overcompensate.
That's what I was thinking. You're trying to make it feel like you're trying to make them believe you.
Yeah. And we want to see that the lie's been believed.
Yeah.
We don't want to miss that. Okay. The person's nodding.
Yeah. Yeah.
They accepted what I said.
Yep.
That makes sense. You know, misattribution of arousal is going to go down a little bit. You're going to be feeling a little bit less nervous. So, but that's the biggest misconception. So like longer than normal eye contact is a key for me. So someone, and when they're talking with their hands. So typically when people are telling the truth, they talk with their hands, and over Zoom or whatever, video conferencing, it's harder. Mm-hmm. But in person, we tend to talk with our hands a fair bit. When someone stops talking, all of a sudden, say, holds their hands in front of them like this, or their hand movements just stop when they say one specific thing, and then they re-engage with their arm movements or hand movements, that's another key indicator that the person's being deceptive.
Sure.
Is that because their brain is thinking more and it kind of overrides the natural? Is that what's going on?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Bruce has a question in the comments. What is the most important facial expression to read? Can an immature do it? An immature amateur do it?
Yeah. What's the most important facial expression to read? Probably depends on the situation. But I say overall, contempt.
And what does that look like? Okay.
Like that. So, and it's a feeling that somebody is worthless. So if you get that facial expression, it's a really bad sign for you. And it shows that, you know, in a sales situation, if you see someone showing you contempt, you've probably lost the sale.
Show that look one more time. Yeah.
So it's the only.
So for those listening, how would you describe that for our podcast listeners?
Yes.
It's a sneer. It's kind of a
one-sided sneer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the one side of your, it's only on one side of your face. The lip comes up.
Yeah.
And because of that, the cheek rises a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like an Elvis.
An Elvis,
but with more contempt, obviously.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. That's a pretty big expression. You think people would try to hide that, or is it just one of those natural reaction?
So I was years ago dating a girl, and we got into an argument, and she showed a contempt micro expression. So it only lasted for, I'd say, a third to half a second.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is bad. This relationship's probably over.
Yeah.
And 6 weeks later, it ended. So.
But was that because of what she felt, or because you read that and then you self self-fulfilling prophecy? That's a whole nother show, but
that's a whole nother show. And I'd have to dig deep into my own subconscious there to fill that out. So yeah. I'm not but sure.
Does that kind of stuff happen? If we think we see something that we, then we kind of live into it with people or,
yeah.
or.
Yes, all the time. So they've done studies on vets actually with PTSD on emotional recognition, and they see anger and fear a lot more than is actually shown. They misidentify emotional states, and that causes them to become angry or fearful or hyper aroused. So like I've gone in and taught pro bono, taught vets how to read facial expressions properly to help them deal with their PTSD.
Interesting. I could get into a whole nother topic on PTSD, but I don't have, we don't have time for that. So,
I'll skip. You mentioned you've got a book coming out. What, tell us, give us a little overview of your book that you're working on, when it's going to be ready and where they can find it when it's ready, or maybe we're too far out. Is that,
we might be too far out. We'll definitely be able to find it on Amazon and the prodigyintel.com site.
Okay.
When it's out. So it's actually a book for politicians and political staff. I did a lot of consulting for political campaigns on body language, teaching staffers and politicians how to read when people are being deceptive so that they get better data when they're out door knocking.
Yeah.
So it's
interesting.
Less of a problem in the States. Because people are very party oriented, but in Canada, it's like 40 to 60% of the population is swing voters.
Really? Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. So we get a lot, and we're a very polite people. So there's a lot of people, politicians going door to door, especially up here saying, you know, I'd like you to vote for me. Here's my platform. Yeah. This is what I stand for. And people say, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to vote for you. And a number of times, you know, they'll mark that down. It's like, oh, we got to get this person out. They're a five supporter. Got to get them, 5 out of 5 supporter. Got to get them out on election day. And with them, it's like, no, they're lying to you. They're voting for somebody else. Like, you don't want to send one of your, you know, volunteers here on election day to drive them to the polls. Let the other party do that.
Right.
And so it's basically a book on body language and politics and deception detection,
but which is very appropriate. I mean, we just had a big Tuesday or election week this past Tuesday in our a major one, but some
couple of governor races,
races, and then you know more local than anything. But it was kind of interesting because you do like to when you listen to politicians out there. It's crazy because what they're saying and what their body language and how they, even their tone. I mean, it's just so, sometimes you can really detect a lot of BS.
Yes.
Just in the way they present their message, even if it's whether it's a good message, whether you think it's a good message or a bad message, sometimes their tone and their, the way they carry themselves doesn't match up with what their message is supposed to be. So it should be a good book for politicians. Hopefully they will learn something because I tell you, I don't know about we don't follow Canadian politics, but I can tell you in the US, we've got some really lousy politicians.
I don't know. I think there's quite a few conservatives here that don't like the prime minister. Is that the right term? For Canada,
Gary Trudeau, yes.
Justin Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau,
Justin Trudeau. Gary Trudeau is the artist, guy.
Yeah. So, all right, well, we got one last question, then we need to wrap it up. Came in from the comments, and let's see, how much can some KGB asking? So be careful. how much can someone who is more introverted improve compared to someone who's naturally charismatic individual? I'm not sure exactly what that means, but.
I know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, okay. Someone who's an introvert, how can they improve? How can they improve their, I guess, their communication and persuasion?
Yeah. So one of the things we do is teach a social engineering course. And for those of you who don't know social engineering, we teach it as like a penetration testing. So how to get into an area where you're not supposed to, as a test of this person's security. So you're supposed to be hired by this company to do this. It's not just getting into wherever you want at any time. But we've taken people and who are extreme introverts, and taking them in 5 days and made them 10, 15, 20 times more extroverted and charismatic.
Wow.
Just over that time, because it's practice and we give lots of practice in there, and it's forcing people to get out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. which they're not going to do on their own or by themselves, and practice these skills. So if you go out and you practice being an extrovert for 2 hours every day, and that's walking up to someone asking, hey, how's it going? All right, start off with something simple. Excuse me, I'm trying to find this store in this mall. I don't know where it is. Can you help me out?
I think you mentioned the key there is asking, because whenever yes. you're asking questions, it's, I think the problem with introverts is they're always afraid because they, you know, they don't want the spotlight to be on them, right?
Yeah.
But whenever you're asking questions to the other person, you're always putting the spotlight on that person. So it kind of, it helps a little bit to take the attention away from yourself and put it on somebody, you know, someone else.
Yes. And my rule of thumb is that in those situations, you should be getting the other person in the first 5 minutes of a conversation to be doing 80% of the talking.
Yeah.
So you should be asking questions, asking questions, and get them to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's going to build that rapport. They're going to feel really good about all these questions you're asking them. You're getting to know them. They're going to leave with a really good feeling as well.
Especially if they're extroverted, right? I guess both, because an introvert probably doesn't get a chance to be outward very often, you know, feeling safe to be outward. So what was the name of that course?
Social engineering.
Okay. So yeah, I put the link in the comments. That's you can scroll down the courses and see social engineering course.
That's kind of bad connotation this day and age, but I might want to work on that title.
Well, we used to call it human, but nobody knew what that was.
Right.
So
I get it.
Yeah. So at least people understand what the course is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Have you, I'm just curious, one of our, real quick before we wrap up, one of our listeners had mentioned in the comments, one book, Joe Navarro. Have you, that was one book that I read a while back.
Yeah.
What Everybody is Saying.
What Everybody is Saying. Yeah. I've read that book.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. I like it. I will say the point of contention I have with Joe is on deception detection. Mm-hmm. He says body language can't be used for deception detection. And there's a number of studies out there that say that it has, or it can be, including three major meta-analyses. So a meta-analysis is where they take like hundreds of scientific studies, combine them all, and find out the outcomes. So there's like 15 key points on body language and deception detection that can be used.
Okay.
And
so, I'm sure you'll point that out in your book. And
yes, I do. I talk about all those points.
Awesome. That'd be good.
And for devil's advocate, for anybody out there that's listening and thinking, okay, well, how can I overcome somebody that's trying to read me? You know, like we were just talking about the guy that's, you know, obviously he's conscious that, you know, person's, you know, lying, or the person that's, you know, being, obviously he's being examined, you know. I think people naturally just, you can't get around it. You know, people kind of give off the cues no matter what. So
yeah. And that goes back to our neurology. Like there's a part of the brain that controls involuntary movement.
Right.
And that's largely what controls our body language, when we're lying, when we're uncomfortable, when we're trying to hide something.
Yeah. I was just curious, because I think, you know, you would think that you know, some of these people, like, you know, whether it's your encounter terrorism, these terrorists, you know, they're trying to be, they're trying to train themselves, or spies are trying to train themselves to be able to overcome interrogation, you know, tactics and be able to avoid being able to be read. But I think it's probably, you know, it's to some impossible. Degree you can, but it's almost nearly impossible because everybody's got, you know, they're
unless you're a sociopath.
Yes. So there are a couple key aspects to stop you from reading, being read.
Yeah.
Sociopath.
Vulcan would be another.
Vulcan. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say individuals with autism. Their brain is different from neurotypical individuals. Mm-hmm. Botox.
Yes. Interesting.
expressions.
I was actually noticing an anchor. I won't say the station or the time or anything, but I was like, she looks different. And then I realized that her expressions were not there.
Yeah.
So she obviously had some work done recently.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was weird. It felt weird because you could not read kind of what she was, mm-hmm. what she was saying and how she was interacting with the guest.
Yeah. So that's one question I get asked all the time. Oh, how can I stop myself from showing micro expressions? And it's the only way is Botox.
There's a whole promo right there for Botox. how to have an affair without getting caught. Get Botox. It's a whole new reason to get Botox.
Hey, Matt, we appreciate you coming on today. It's been very interesting. Again, we want to mention, obviously, again, your website, prodigyintel.com. Is that the best place people can learn more?
Yeah, that's the best place. And we have, if anyone's interested who's listening, who wants to take one of our courses, mm-hmm. use the promo code PINT20 to get 20% off any of our courses until the end of the year. So PINT? You just got to buy the course before the end of the year. PINT20 for 20% off.
Sean and I, we can use that promo too, can't we?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, we will, we'll certainly post that in our show notes and along with the promo code for people that want to access that, take advantage of it. Really cool stuff. Well, we're going to send you to the green room here for a second. Sean and I are going to wrap up the show. So if you will hang tight for just a minute or so, we'll bring you back up afterward.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me, and it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks again. Good stuff, man. Fascinating.
I know, right? That's just one of those topics you can just kind of keep doing what ifs and hypotheticals and all that kind of stuff for days. So,
yep, no doubt.
It's good stuff. And some of the courses on his site at prodigyintel.com look pretty good. So, I put those in the comments with the discount code.
Oh,
and we can add that to the show notes as well. But
awesome.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see you tapped into the second beer too.
Yeah, I did.
Went from dark. That glass went from dark to light quick.
It did. So, and then they're both good. The pumpkin, I got to say, the whole, if you get a chance to pick up the Harpoon Duncan series, and it's only limited, they only have it out for like 2 months during this time. So, but it's an assortment. You can get the case assortment. It is, everything is really good there. Cause I've already had, there's a couple of others in the series, probably one that I'm going to save for next week. I think it's a maple cream. It's good. Really good.
I may have to go check that out and get some donuts this weekend.
That's right.
For the game.
For the big game.
11 o'clock kickoff. That's 11 o'clock for me, 12 o'clock for you.
That's right. All right. So thank you all for the comments. Appreciate all of our listener comments. And also, again, for Matt joining us today. For all of our listeners, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. And Sean, it's been fun, man. We're going to have another episode today, our second episode coming up shortly. We'll get into our random fight, as we always like to do. From time to time, and we've got some goodies coming up. So stay tuned.
The stuff you sent me—that's fun. Yeah, that'll be fun.
It will be. So, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.
See you.